All right, the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. It's Monday afternoon. Welcome. We have a lot going on today, so we're going to move through pretty quickly. The proponents of the bills will give a little bit extra time, but mostly we're going to be trying to limit people to about 2 minutes a piece today, just because we have a lot of bills and a lot of people signed up to do all of them. We are, at the request of Representative Andy Olson, we are holding over the work session on Senate Bill 246 until Wednesday, but I would like to briefly open up the work session on Senate Bill 231. And this, you have it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. With the amendments?
You open a work session?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 231.
Senator Montes Anderson moves to adopt the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 231. This is the Student Mental Health Task Force.
I have a question. Madam Chair, maybe we talked about this, and I can't remember, but why the subsequent referral to general government?
The presiding officer's office put a subsequent referral to general government and ways and means on every task force bill this session.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So they'll go through the policy, and then general government will decide how many task forces we need.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further discussion? Is there any objection to the dash two amendments? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Montes Anderson?
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 231 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on General Government and Accountability and then the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Montes Anderson moves Senate Bill 231 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be sent to the Committee on General Government and Accountability and the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Would you like to vote, Senator Olson? This is Senate Bill 231, the Student Mental Health Task Force.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
All right. Is there any objection to the bill? That's where we're on. Would you like to object, or are you?
No.
All right. Seeing none, so ordered, and the bill moves on out of the committee. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 231. I thought I just saw Doug move in. Doug, we are moving Senate Bill 246 over to Wednesday at the request of Representative Olson. And with that, I am going to open up 277, right? All members? Yes. Okay. So I'm going to open up the public hearing on Senate Bill. And just to let you all know what we're doing, we're going to start with 277. Then we're going to go through the bills in the order of the smallest number of people signed up to testify so that people can move on that can move on. So I'm opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 277. And we have our members.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 277 increases the notice period for termination of rental agreements and removal of manufactured dwelling or floating home from 30 to 60 days. It requires landlord's notice of lease termination to include specific disrepair or deterioration that is the cause of the termination and specific repairs required to correct the deficiency. It defines terms and it declares emergency and is effective on passage.
Welcome.
Welcome and thank you. And I'll start just because this bill, for the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay. I had a constituent who called me and was very upset with a letter that they'd received about repairs and other kinds of things that they needed to do. And some of them were okay. Others were kind of like strange that they were doing it. And a bunch of the neighbors in the area got even angry. And that constituent had my job before. She was Senator Verger. And when Senator Verger calls, we usually have a conversation and talk about it. So,
I'm looking at Senator Johnson behind you, making sure that I did not fail to invite her up.
You're on another fine piece of
public property. Perfect. Thank you.
And so we started the process, started having conversations and figure out who and best to write it. And we ended up with the bill that you have before you today. To give tenants a little bit better understanding, and I think most tenants, if asked, would try to fix things if they have the resources to do that. And I think that what happened was one that set a whole lot of people in an emotional state that I don't think we really want to continue to have. And so the bill is was addressed to let people work together to solve the problem. And you're going to have a lot of experts come before after me, but we've had some great conversations with Senator Berger about this, and her daughter's here. She's going to talk a little later. But I thank you for hearing the bill, and I really appreciate the other people who decided to get on the bill after we got it going. So with that, I'll let them speak. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate District 17. Good Lord, I'm tired. Northwest Portland and Beaverton. I'm here with my colleagues because I, too, along with Representative Helm, who represents half of my district, have an area, a heritage village in our district, where the tenants got very similar letters. And we had the privilege, Representative Helm and I, of attending a meeting with folks at Heritage Village some months ago. And here's what I would say to you. When you were a child, you were told, learn the rules, understand what they mean, understand what's expected of you, and obey them. And to a large extent, we all try very hard to do that. The rules are unfair, then we try to change them. But most of us try to be law-abiding, rule-abiding, lease-abiding citizens and be productive members of our communities. But when the rules change in an arbitrary fashion without notice, and when you don't have a chance to be a rule-abiding person, and when the fact that the rules have changed and you are therefore no longer rule-abiding puts you at risk of losing your home, then I think we've got a real problem in this community. And we need to do what we can, especially at a time when we have such a substantial housing crisis, to address the needs of Oregonians who are trying very, very hard to play by the rules, who are trying hard to maintain a nice community for themselves and their children. Older people live in these communities. Young families live in these communities, and they want to do the right thing. And it's very frustrating and scary for them when the rules change and they try to do the right thing, and then the rules change again and they try to do the right thing, and they're afraid of losing their home and disrupting their families' lives. I'm sure you'll have an opportunity today to hear from constituents, either of Senator Robles or Representative Helms and myself. But that's why I feel so passionately about these bills. These are not people who are trying to have an unfair advantage. They're not people who are doing anything wrong. They just want to do the right thing, but they're being asked to do unreasonable amounts of things in unreasonable periods of time, and the goalposts keep moving. And that's not the rules that people should have to live by. So that's why this is an important bill to me.
Thank you very much. Representative Helm.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Ken Helm, State Representative for House District 34 in Beaverton. And as the Senator said, this is in the corner of my district as well, not too far from my house, in fact. And what I'd like to say are a couple things. One, you know, most of you know I'm a lawyer, and this is my kind of law, too. It's land use and landlord-tenant law. This is a really simple bill. This provides clarification of two definitions of deterioration and disrepair as they apply to manufactured homes in manufactured home parks. Very straightforward. And the reason that we brought these clarifications is that formerly there was a lot of gray area here. And what happened in this instance, in all of these instances that we're talking about, is that the property management company is interpreting the statute loosely in order to, I think, harass their own tenants. And this is something that when I met with my own constituents and went out and walked the streets of their very, very nice, well-kept manufactured home park, made me really angry. These are not poorly kept homes. These are homes where people have pride in ownership. They've retired from public service often and are on fixed incomes. This is all they have, and they're doing a lot with it. And I thought, my gosh, how can you have any peace of mind when you think you've got your future settled? You know where you're going to live, maybe die in these homes. And that's not, I'm not exaggerating. I heard that several times. And then the piece of land under which your home is sitting on top of, the owner of that says, well, you need to do this. And once you do it, well, you need to do that. And once you do that other thing, well, we change the rules again. And by the way, these notices have included the word eviction. That's terrorizing these poor people. They're not like attorneys like me and John Van Lanningham behind me who say, yeah, yeah, evict, right, yeah, come at me. These are regular people that are scared to death at seeing that word because they don't know where they're going to go or what they're going to do about it or if they're going to have to hire a lawyer to protect themselves. So I hope you can tell how angry I still am about this and how unfair I think the treatment of my constituents has been. And when you hear today, which you might, oh, that this is a very complex area of law and there's a lot of this and that's that need to be done, I don't buy it. It's a simple bill, clarification of a couple definitions, and we will fix this problem, at least for the time being. And I hope you'll give that your due consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for these members?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Olson.
Thank you very much. It really is a simple bill. There's no question about it. And you've changed the time limit from 30 to 60-day notification that there's a problem. But I see a problem that you as lawyers probably will bring up when you try to look at the definition of, for example, disrepair is broken, collapsing, creating a safety hazard. But if it's just downright nasty looking, is that considered disrepair? Because, and the reason I ask this question is because park owners and stuff like that want their park to be saleable, be marketable, so that people would want to move in. But on the other side of the coin, they have to have some measure of certainty that can come to you and say, please, you really need to fix this.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, you know, to some degree, definitions are never complete, and they are subjective to some degree. And in strictly speaking, ordinary terms within a definition would be given their typical and ordinary dictionary meaning. So there is a way to ferret that out. And I would say I'm going to defer to John Van Lanningham on this, who deals with this more often than I do. But typically, these types of definitional provisions are supposed to be given their common sense, common meaning, interpretation. And so that doesn't mean, I agree that the nasty-looking type of example might be something that park owners want to avoid. And typically, I think there are also guidelines that are provided by most competent park owners that flesh that out as well. And so this is, I look at the statute as more of a backstop to those as well.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Olson, I appreciate the question, and I think it's a valid one. It's been well established under our own law. It's perfectly reasonable for places like this to have codes for, I mean, agreements and standards, as Representative Helm mentioned, for aesthetics, if you will. I mean, there's some room for personal interpretation, but we know that they can direct about paint colors on the outside of the house. We know that they can do lots of stuff, and we don't disagree with that. As long as the rules are clearly spelled out up front and they don't change them without reasonable warning, and that's the issue, right? I mean, these definitional changes are very important. But with regard to your point, we agree. It's perfectly reasonable. And I would agree with what Representative Helm said, at least at Heritage Village. It's a beautiful neighborhood. I'd be perfectly happy to live there. It's lovely. The people are warm and welcoming. They're trying hard to build a great community. They're well-maintained, the vast majority of the places. And nobody's got stuff that, I mean, I didn't see anything that I would have considered aesthetically unpleasing. So I don't think that's what anybody's trying to do with this bill at all, Senator. We completely agree with you. We're just trying to make sure there's consistency and the rules don't get changed on hardworking people who are trying to do the right thing.
Well, when I read this bill, though, it doesn't address your situation because it just changes it from 30 to 60 days. The rules can still be changed. If that's in fact what's going on, as the rules are being changed.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I think that there's two different issues here. The issue first and foremost is how much time do you give people to make the repairs? That's what's being changed from 30 to 60 days. Not whether the rules can be changed, but to make the repairs. And to clarify the definition of what disrepair means, right? If you have something that is in good condition and that doesn't meet this new definition of disrepair and does not violate other well-established provisions of the contract and are not aesthetically unpleasing, then asking people to make those changes is not reasonable. And the things that were being defined in the cases that Senator Roble and Representative Helm and I can tell you about, the things that were being classified as being in disrepair were not things that any of us, you as a contractor, Senator, me as a homeowner, would ever consider being under disrepair or aesthetically unpleasing. Is that a fair statement, gentlemen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. And just a question, because I know you're all heading off to other places. In terms of the bill itself, the structure of the bill, is the bill ready to go? Do you anticipate needing amendments for the bill?
Right now, I feel we're ready to go.
We're ready to go.
No. You're getting a wildly shaking.
From a lot of other people.
Amendments.
You're getting a no from.
Oh yeah, there are some amendments.
So there may be some amendments.
There may be some amendments.
All right. Great. And then we'll circle back with all of you if you're not able to stay, so we can get those in and get this scheduled for a work session.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. So Matt, help me out with my schedule. Well, we're taking the members first, but we also have Senator Johnson. Which bill did you want to speak on?
880.
I'm here for Senate Bill 880.
Okay, I'm going to temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 277 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 880. And I think we have Senator Olson and Senator, you are not Senator Monis Anderson. Senator Johnson.
I'm going to check. Be a nasty surprise to Senator Monis Anderson.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for your courtesy in allowing us to play through. I'm chairing my own committee across the hall. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16. I'm going to make a couple of high-level remarks and then scamper. When Senator Verger served here in the legislature, I considered her my closest friend. We talk with regularity. And what I think is regrettable in this instance is that CalAmp picked the wrong girl to pick on. But what we have ended up with, I think, is a situation where there are two competing solutions. And I will come back to that in just a second. CalAmp have not been good actors. I'm not here in any way, shape, or form to make a brief for them. In fact, their procedures in dealing with tenants have rippled through the mobile home community at a time when a number of people who live in mobile homes are part of solving an affordable home crisis. I have a number of mobile home parks in my district, and the behavior of CalAmp has not gone unnoticed by those park owners. So I'm not here to make a brief for a company that I think applied a pretty heavy hand. Rather, I'm here to make a brief for a bill that suggests a less confrontational approach to the resolution of landlord-tenant problems. There is a better way to solve, I think, some of the controversies that have come forward between landlords and tenants, and I will leave some of the technical explanation to others who will follow me. The Manufactured Home Landlord-Tenant Coalition will meet tomorrow. And it's the same way with MLAC and other forums where people with different opinions take the fight outside and work it out between themselves rather than making us pick. We're 90 generalists, and I would so much rather have a recommendation that comes from the compromise of adversarial parties than to have us decide the best solution. But the Landlord-Tenant Coalition is going to meet tomorrow. And I would plead with you before you get Senate Bill 277 ready for a work session that we at least give the process a chance to effectuate a solution that is not quite as draconian as the solution proposed in 277. 277 has been described as a simple bill. I think it is more complicated than it appears on the surface, and I believe that it is poor public policy to legislate to the lowest common denominator. We're trying to fix a bad actor's relationship with their tenants. I think that there is a way to do this in a more surgical way, and I would plead with you to give this enough time to develop to see if the landlord-tenant coalition can come back to you with a compromise that they all, that play play in this arena have agreed to. And that really concludes my testimony. I think Senator Olson and others can provide additional technical information about the bill.
And Senator Johnson, can you just give us an update on where the coalition is? I know that I heard from, I have a number of manufactured home parts in my community, and they were devastated by kind of the crumbling of the coalition when their voice was not allowed to be heard in the discussion in the agenda building. Is everyone back at the table? Is it just some people that are at the table? And is it functioning in the way that it did in the past, or is that relationship irrevocably broken?
I'm going to leave that to others to comment on. Let me tell you my answer based on my firsthand knowledge rather than speculation. I, too, had heard that it had disintegrated and that there was quite a bit of controversy. I reached out to members of the coalition and basically said, knock it off, guys. We're counting on you to be the table at which these differences can be reconciled. I believed that after my round of phone calls that they met again. I don't know the status as of right now. I'm not sitting in on the meetings, but I would hope that people of goodwill interested in seriously solving problems would put some of the egos, some of the posturing aside, and set a table where all voices could be heard and we could resolve these kind of issues in an amicable negotiation rather than bringing it in here and asking 90 amateurs to guess what the right answer is. So I can't give you the current status from firsthand knowledge, but I can tell you from firsthand knowledge when it was evident to me that there were difficulties and people had stomped out of the room, I made a round of calls saying, come on, guys, let's get past whatever the short-term problem is and get people back at the negotiating table. I'll leave it to others to comment on what the status is.
Madam Chair, I thought that the manufactured housing people were always at the table. It was the others that were not.
I would prefer not to comment because I don't know all of the inner workings. I don't know what happened. I'm less
fine
eager
to stay. You don't have to take her out. Okay.
I am less eager in tracking down and punishing the guilty as I am with a forward look towards trying to get this resolved at a table where these differences can be worked out rather than coming in here and asking us to adjudicate. With that, I'm going to excuse myself, Madam
right.
Chair, and go back to my now quorumless committee.
All right. Thank you, good Senator. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Vice Chair, oh, that's me. my name is Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, the heart of Clackamas County. I was here basically to back up Senator Johnson in case anybody tried to sneak up behind her. I'd like to probably just forego my discussion on 880 until we get to it. But I think this will be a really, really good solution to that very simple bill we just heard. And I think that this might get us over the hump, but I'll forego my testimony until we get to that point, if that's okay with you.
All right, very good. Thank you very much. So, Matt, we have some logistical. Is it on this bill? Do we know who? All right. So we have.
Is the answer to this?
Is Efra Caldera in the room? Yes. Great. Do you need a translator?
Oh, no.
Okay, great. I'm trying to make sure that we use the translating services for. Is there anybody on this bill that is planning to testify?
77?
On 880. Is there anyone on 880 that we need translation services for, or should we go back to 277?
277. So, okay. I think I'd rather hold back if he's also holding back from testimony and working back for today, for 880.
Okay, very good. So take Efra off. Okay, great. Okay, so I think what we're going to do is temporarily close 880. Go back to 277 so that we can do, we have a translator here for a short period of time,
yes.
Do that, and then we will go back to the order of the shortest number of people that are signed up. So reopening the public hearing on Senate Bill 277, and I don't know how to presuppose, I think we've got some folks that are wanting to testify that may need translation services, and I would invite them forward on 277.
that. So.
Thank you. And what is your name, sir?
Salvador Rivera.
Salvador. And Natalia Rivera, is she here too?
Yes, she
is. Buenos dias. Welcome.
Bienvenido. Gracias. Thank you. No estoy entendiendo muy exactamente de todo lo que están hablando porque no entiendo muy bien inglés.
He said that he cannot understand very well everything because he don't understand very well English.
Pero,
and that's okay because I don't understand Spanish very well, so we're on the same page.
Porque ella no entiende español tampoco.
Okay. Algo están estoy entendiendo de las reglas, ¿no? De lo que quieren hacer, que cambiar las reglas de 30 días, algo así, de dar nada más para de notificación, que si no arreglamos nuestras casas móviles, vamos a tener que ser desalojados. Eso es lo que están diciendo. Disculpe.
He want to confirm that what you are saying is that the rule have is going to change less than 30 days, and where he live, the landlord can change the rule in 30 days. That's what he understand what is happening.
And in Senate Bill 277, it would change it to 60 days.
Dice que la regla 277 la va a cambiar a 60 días.
Oh, okay, creo que es esto. Entonces está bien, así son 60 días, todavía tenemos un poquito más de tiempo para buscar algún lugar si tenemos que ir.
He said that in 60 days he has more time to find a different place if he need to evacuate.
Tengo una pregunta. No sé si pueda entrar aquí también eso. Compré una casa manufacturada que la compré en el 2015, en diciembre del 2015, tengo un año y meses con ella. Entonces se está partiendo todo por adentro y por afuera. Entonces mi pregunta es si van a cambiarlo a 60 días, por ejemplo, si ellos hacen revisión, los managers de la compañía, o sea, la casa está toda partida, entonces yo la tengo que arreglar en 60 días. Yo no, es muchísimo dinero para arreglar una casa nueva en 60 días. Es eso.
He said that he just bought a house, but the house needs maintenance. It's broken inside, it's falling apart. And he said that in 60 days he cannot have that ready to move. That he have that question.
Sí, esa es mi pregunta. O sea, la casa está partida afuera como 4 partiduras, la casa de adentro son como 15 partiduras. Entonces mi pregunta es, yo no, si los managers de los lugares donde yo vivo me dicen tienes 60 días para arreglar tu casa, se me hace muy injusto que yo no voy a poder arreglar la casa en 60 días.
He said that the manager are asking him to fix the house in 60 days, but the house is so broke that he doesn't have. And in 60 days, he can physically fix the house.
And it's a house that sits on a manufactured park land, and you purchased a home in disrepair with the intention of repairing it to live in? Is that?
Ella dice que si la casa que tú estás vas a remodelar está sobre una tierra que tú pagas renta por ella.
Sí.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
If I may help.
La compré la casa Callum Home. Callum Home fue la que me la vendió la casa. Estaba supuestamente en buenas condiciones cuando yo la compré.
Espérate. He bought the house for Callum Homes and he was thinking the house was in good condition.
Ajá. Entonces no tienen más de un año, está nueva la casa, nuevecita.
The house is brand new. But
sí, está nuevecita completa, se está partiendo toda, entonces.
And the house is broken apart, falling apart, and it's brand new.
Ahora que yo les he estado hablando, he hablado a la financiera, he hablado a los managers del parque, he hablado con el vendedor, creo, algo así, se llama, no sé cómo se llama, Firas, el señor. Mm-hmm.
He talked with the manager of the place, he talked with the sales representative, he talked with the owner, and...
Y no, nada más echan la culpa el que instaló la casa, dice que el de la manufactura es el responsable y el de la manufactura dice que es el que instaló la casa.
And they are all blaming each other person. The person that sell the house blame the person that own the land and the own the land blame the person that sell the house.
And can I ask a question? We are all under the umbrella of Cal-Am. Does Cal-Am own the land underneath and Cal-Am sold you a broken house and is now telling you that they're going to repossess your house because it is in disrepair and that's the condition it was in when they sold it to you?
Ella está preguntando que si Callahan es la misma compañía que te vendió la casa y donde estás viviendo ahora. ¿Es la misma compañía?
Donde yo vivo es es en Heritage Village, supuestamente son los dueños de Callahan Home, entonces la financiera también es parte
yes.
de Callahan Home también. Ajá.
May I ask how much you paid for the house?
¿Cuánto paga? For the new house?
For the new house.
¿Cuánto pagas por la casa nueva?
¿Por la renta o por la renta del espacio y por el pago de la casa también? De los ambos.
He want to ask for the rent or for the housing payment or for the land.
For the property that's in disrepair, for the house that's falling apart.
Por la casa que se está desarmando.
Ahorita estoy pagando. Esta es la primera vez que me bajaron el pago. Bueno, es muy enredado. Son $795 lo que estoy pagando.
$795.
El costo de la casa. El costo de la casa. $95,000.
And the cost of the house is $90,000.
Okay.
$95,000.
And then one other question. I'm sorry, others might have questions. I'm just trying to piece this together. So they sold you a house for $95,000, and they told you the house was a new house, and you assumed it is a new house, and you assumed it was not a broken house.
Ellos te vendieron una casa por $95,000 y tú pensaste que era nueva y tú pensaste que estaba buena, ¿verdad?
No, ellos me dijeron que estaba nueva, completamente nueva.
They told him that the house was brand new.
And now that you've bought the house and you're on the land, they want you to fix the defective house that you've bought or else they're going to kick you out after 30 days.
Y ahora ellos quieren que tú arregles la casa.
No, yo pienso que ahora que ellos vuelvan a revisar en unos meses, me puedan hacer que me pidan arregla tu casa porque tu casa se está partiendo, entonces yo no voy a tener dinero tal vez para arreglar ese detalle.
He said that maybe the manager in a super, you know, in a, when they go and visit the house, they will tell him you need to fix the house in 60 days and he doesn't have the time or the money to do it.
Thank you. Are there other questions for Mr. Rivera?
I think I have one.
Okay, Senator Olson.
But I missed what you were asking him. But he, if I get this right, he purchased a house and it needs repair.
No, he purchased a brand new house that was sold to him by Cal-Am to be put on a property at Cal-Am. And once he bought the house, Cal-Am told him the house is broken and you have 60 days to fix it. And Cal-Am will not take responsibility for it. And he's facing losing a house that he just paid $90,000 for a brand new house, losing his housing for himself and his family.
So we've got a bad actor in Cal-Am.
Clearly.
Exactly.
Are there other questions? Senator.
Would he not have recourse with a state agency for this failure on Cal-Am's part to sell him a house that didn't need repair? Did he see the house before he bought it?
Que si viste la casa antes de comprarla.
Oh, sí, estaba nueva, completamente, se miraba bien.
The house was brand new. It looked very well when he bought it.
So then the follow is it the same? Did they deliver the same house then?
Que si
or is it a different house?
Sí, que tuviste.
Sí, por favor.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'd have to elaborate. I think there's a little bit of.
Can you come up to the microphone? Maybe. Thank you.
She should identify herself.
And you'll need to identify yourself for the record.
My name is Elva. I'm Elva Caldera, and I'm also a resident at Heritage Village, and I'm the vice president of the neighborhood committee that we have in the village.
Good.
So I want to elaborate on the situation. We've been following through pretty much very closely with the situation with the Rivera family. They bought a brand new home that had been recently installed in the park. As of 2015, probably the summer of 2015, there have been most likely 20 brand new homes installed in different lots throughout the park. This particular home is, like he explained, is cracking. It's falling apart, and he is concerned that during the next inspection that we expect will happen during this year, that he will be made responsible for the deterioration that is very visible on the outside of the home, and it's more noticeable on the inside of the home, that he is paying a loan of $95,000 for, and he's been getting the runaround on who's going to fix it, whether it's blaming each other, the seller, the financer, and the manufacturer. And we understand that Palm Harbor Homes is no longer a company. That's the manufacturer.
Okay, I've got some questions,
okay,
if you
good.
Don't mind.
Sure.
Just trying to...
So nada más explique más en detalle.
Please direct the questions.
Yeah, I will, but okay, they were chatting. Just trying to clarify this, and you're kind of in where I live now because I'm a builder. He bought the home. Was the home already on site?
Yes.
It was already there. And how long had it been there prior to him purchasing it?
¿Qué le dijeron a usted cuánto tiempo tenía instalada la casa?
Creo que no. No le dijeron que la venía instalada. No.
Que estaba nueva.
Estaba nueva, ¿no?
He wasn't told how long the home had been installed. I don't recollect, but she's a neighbor.
About
the neighbor.
Okay.
It's about 6 months prior it was installed.
And we have to only have it coming from the microphone. We have all these rules here. I understand.
So the neighbors who are next to them say that it probably had been 6 months since that home had been installed on a new... It was a pre-existing lot.
Okay.
So it was a new installation.
Okay. So
6 months to when he bought it in December of 2015.
And I'm going to do a follow-up on that. So then if I were Mr. Rivera, I would be looking at the people that installed it, which would be, would that be Cal-Am?
Yes.
With someone else?
That was Cal-Am and their contractors.
Okay, so it was their contractors. It sounds like there could be an installation problem, which should be covered by the seller.
We'd assume... Ellos están explicando que él es un contratista, es una persona que construye casas, el señor Olsen. So él está asumiendo que es un problema de la instalación y es un problema que tiene que garantizar los vendedores de la casa. I just translated your phrase.
Okay.
So
just one follow-up. And I would suggest when we have another bill that we just talked about, Senate Bill 880, this might be just up his alley to help him.
So él está explicando que quizás la enmienda en el otro la otra propuesta 880 quizás esto es algo que usted le va a beneficiar y quizás usted pueda también
explicar.
Okay.
Thank you. And this is in Coos Bay?
This is in Beaverton.
In Beaverton. Okay. Sorry. This started with Senator Roblin's.
This is Heritage Village.
Okay. And Representative Helms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If you may. I am a general contractor. I would be glad to look at your property for you and give you an evaluation of what's wrong.
Dice que él es un contratista de propiedades y que él estaría muy dispuesto de revisarle su casa sin...
At no charge.
Did you say...
Or as attorneys say, pro bono.
Gratuitamente.
Okay. Well, Mr. Rivera, thank you so much for taking time to come. I have rarely sat in a hearing and been so surprised, aghast, or disgusted by a story. And I am sorry that this happened to you. I don't know if there is anyone here from Cal-Am. This might not be the place to have the conversation, but I would be very interested in finding out why a company, if the story is true, that is not just bad business, that's immoral. And I'm sorry that happened to you when you made an investment in a home for your family. Natalia, do you like the neighborhood that you're living in?
Yes.
It's good.
Sounds like a field trip, Madam Chair.
Yeah, it does sound like a field trip. Sounds like a good field trip. Maybe we could come visit, like Representative Helm did.
Ella nunca había oído una historia como la de ustedes, y que ella está muy consternada y estaría muy preocupada si hubiera tenido que comprar con una compañía y haber pasado por la situación que ellos están haciendo, que ustedes están pasando, perdón.
Sí, muchas gracias.
Ya, y está contenta, están contentos de que Natalia está aquí, que es una experiencia de aprendizaje para ella también.
Thank you very much.
I believe she wanted to...
Oh, yes, Natalia, please.
Okay.
And you can pull that down just a little bit, and you don't have to get super close. You're about exactly right there. And you have to start by saying your name.
Okay. Well, my name's Natalia Rivera, and I'm here because last year the manager of Heritage Village told us we had to remove our swings. But the swings were at the back of our house, and they were well put down by my dad, and my dad has always took good care of us. And I also think it's very unfair that we had to remove our swings. But they told us I could go play at the playgrounds, but the playgrounds are dirty and they're not so safe. And I also want to say that I will not always be a kid, and so I want my swings back to enjoy them while I'm young enough to play with them.
Thank you.
Good job.
That was very well done. I'm glad you came today, Natalia, and you were a very good public speaker. Have you thought about running for office sometime for the legislature or the city council?
But no, Madam Chair,
you should consider yourself asked when it comes
Madam
to time.
Chair, why is she not in school?
Because she is participating in democracy.
Absolutely.
I am glad that you are here today. And then you can go back to school tomorrow.
Yes.
All right. Anything else?
No.
Muchas gracias.
All right. Thank you. Thank you all very much. And to be fair, is there anybody here today representing Cal-Am? Mr. Cosgrove, come on up.
He doesn't want to.
Hey, Madam Chair, Paul Cosgrove, representing Cal-Am. I heard the testimony beforehand, and I've texted my client to see if I can find out some additional information, but it's not a story I've heard, nor have I, in fact, heard of any houses being sold directly by Cal-Am to a resident. That may have happened. I know there are a number of cases where Cal-Am owns the land and a former owner sells a home to a new owner. I'll have to find out. So on that particular set of facts, I can't really comment. I just don't know.
Okay.
I have information I'd like to provide on 277, and both on that and on 880, at the chair's pleasure, now or later.
You know, you're here. Let's. And I'm gonna open up. Do you prefer to do that both at the same time, or do we bring you back up when we come to 880?
It would be convenient to do so if that's okay.
Okay, so we're gonna open up 880 at the same time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You will hear today from a number of residents, and I see a number have signed up, that the current law and its implementation doesn't work well for tenants in mobile home parks. What I want to impart to you is it also doesn't work all that well for the owners of mobile home parks. And that's because we have a system that's developed over the years. Mr. Van Lanningham's been part of that development for many years, which essentially requires owners and tenants, the minute there's any rule change, any rule violation, to become immediately adversarial. And let me explain what I mean by that. In each of the parks, Heritage Village is one, all the other parks I assume are similar, there are detailed sets of rules about what tenants may do and may not do in these parks. And they include the requirements in general, either to not have certain kinds of sheds, or to have certain kinds of sheds at certain sizes, or certain kinds of decks of certain kinds, or more likely than not, to require that on any of those things there be written permission from the park owner before the shed, the deck, the painting of the house, any of those things are conducted. So what we have developed is a process where if a tenant doesn't follow that process and doesn't seek written permission, or doesn't know that they need to seek written permission, although these rules are part of their rental agreement that they've signed at the beginning, and they go ahead and do that, the adversarial nature of our current statutes come about by the fact that if a landlord either doesn't see that that's happened, or ignores it, or doesn't know that it's happened for 3 months and continues to accept rent, with a few exceptions, that violation of the rule has then been waived. That's the current law. It means that we don't have a set of rules that incentivize people to follow the rules, which they all agreed to abide by. And by the way, I just need to make a comment. The rules in Heritage Village have been the rules in Heritage Village for more than 10 years. They've not changed, and current law doesn't allow them to be changed without participation of tenants. In fact, tenants to vote on that. So it's not a question of rules changing. It is, in fact, a question of things having happened that landlords didn't complain about, and then 3 months has gone by, And then in many cases, if it isn't disrepair or deterioration, as undefined currently and as to be defined in Senate Bill 277, if it isn't a few things like that, they're waived forever. Now, what the problem with that is it means that if you're going to have your rules enforced and they were put there to keep the park the same for all tenants, for the benefits of all tenants and their property values, you either have to start very quickly sending 30-day eviction notices, because that's what the statute currently provides, even for the most minor violations, or you lose your right to ever enforce that rule. That's current law. That does not work well for tenants. It does not work well for park owners either. Senate Bill 880 is an attempt to get around that by a new process that is less adversarial, that doesn't threaten eviction to start with. It talks about, we believe you violated a rule. Here's what we think you need to do. Let's sit down and talk about it. Let's negotiate a time by which you'll correct that. If you don't correct it, then the landlord has the right to go to eviction. But it doesn't start with the adversarial process. It starts with a more conciliatory and negotiating process. Senate Bill 277, in our view, goes the opposite direction and makes a bad situation even a little bit worse. It narrows the kinds of things that are called deterioration and disrepair, which means that more of these rule violations that everybody has agreed to will be outside of that category. That's the major category of things that are not waived if you haven't complained about them as a landlord in 3 months. Deterioration, disrepair are not waived, but only, essentially, with a few other minor exceptions, deterioration and disrepair. If you narrow what that definition is, then it means you've got more things outside that definition in which this 30-day, you're going to be evicted unless you fix this kind of notice is going to happen. So regardless of whether the process in Beaverton or any of these other parks with this landlord or any other landlord was handled well this time, I can grant that there could have been better handling of a number of issues. But I think what I would like to have the committee consider is there a better way to handle these problems in the future? A way so that you don't start out with a 30-day eviction notice on the most minor violation of a rule that's been in the park, that the park owners and tenants agreed to, and that arguably a tenant has failed to follow. Is there a better way to do that? And we believe 880 is a better way to do that. We believe 277 is a less better way and makes the current adversarial process even a little bit worse. There's no objection to defining disrepair and deterioration. The objection is, how do we handle other kinds of rule violations that everybody's agreed to, the park owners have voted on at some point, that have been in existence for a long time and have not changed? How do we get everybody to perform in accordance with those rules, and what do we do if somebody doesn't? There are park owners who will say that they believe it's important for those rules, and some of them are purely aesthetic, to be enforced because it affects their value. If you think about it, this isn't all that different from a homeowners association, which often has what paint you can what colors you can paint the house, what you can do about things that are added to the house. All of those things are very common in that context as well. They're even more important in a mobile home park where everybody is much closer and therefore much more affected by what their neighbors do or don't do. So that's the basic problem. And the disagreement, to the extent there is one, and I'm hoping that in tomorrow's meeting we'll have at least further discussion about things that we might agree upon, is what to do on a going forward basis to make this better.
And I appreciate your reaching out to your client. It would be great if you could provide that information to us about
Mr. Rivera.
About Mr. Rivera's case. And I just, as a matter of curiosity, would be curious to know what children's swings violate in terms of a community standard.
What I would bet, Madam Chair, and I've read the Heritage Village rules. They're about 30 pages long, so I can't say I've memorized them. Almost everything to the exterior of the house cannot be done by a tenant absent landlord approval. And they have standards for those things. As I said, for sheds, for decks, for things. I would guess that that's something that didn't get landlord approval.
Well, it would be helpful if you could could provide those. And if there was any follow-up information that was provided to Representative Helm after his visit to Heritage Village, that would be helpful for our record as well. I think the concern that I have is that that story was pretty disturbing. Based on the demeanor and testimony of Representative Helm, and I'm guessing the number of people that are listed here, that's probably not the first disturbing story we're going to hear today. We had Senator Johnson arguing that we had a very bad actor here, and I would be curious to know, as we look at this, you know, as Senator Johnson said, you don't legislate to the lowest common denominator, but how do we protect these people if there is an entity out there that will behave in this way and put people at such significant risk absent a statute? So I would be very interested in a very direct reply from CalAM about what the justification is for these types of actions and the way that they have impacted the people that live in these places.
And Madam Chair, I agree with you. And I agree that we don't legislate to the lowest common denominator.
That wasn't my argument. That was Senator Johnson's argument.
No, but I agree with both. And in fact, what I think the trick here is there will be problems that have happened in the past that need to be resolved and addressed, and that's something that my client needs to do. But with respect to your job in terms of going forward is, what is the best way to make this situation less likely to happen in the future? What are the right incentives for both sides to do the right thing, to follow the rules that they've agreed to follow, and to give landlords a way to do rule enforcement in a way that's less adversarial, in your face, and difficult? I think that's...
I think less adversarial is always great. The only pushback I would have is, I think Mr. Rivera's problem is not in the past. That seems like a very much today problem, and I see a little girl that's sitting here that doesn't have her swings and might end up not having a place to live because her family invested money in what seems like a pretty shady
transaction. Yeah, and we will for sure look at that, and I will report back.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Mr. Mosley?
I do. Thanks. I got a little lost there, Paul. Sorry. So bear with me. So you mentioned that sort of decision making over the exterior of the units is in the hands of the landlord, kind of similar to the way that homeowner associations might come to some agreement. But is there a homeowners association for the manufactured tenants? I mean, what role do they have in deciding, you know, what the community standards should be? Because I'm not opposed to that kind of thing as long as there's real input and decision-making by the neighbors.
Madam Chair, Senator Denborough, there are committees in most, if not all, parks. I can't say all parks, but I believe it's correct to say there is one in Heritage Village. The rules are reviewed when you sign up, and as I mentioned, I think this is very important, the rules cannot change without a vote of the tenants, all the tenants. And that's even more empowering, I think, to tenants than the typical homeowners association, where a board of a homeowners association might very well decide to change something in terms of homeowner association rules. They can do it without a vote of all the homeowners in the neighborhood. We can't. We don't. It's against the law to do that. So it's not quite like a homeowners association. In fact, in some ways, it's more strict than a homeowners association in terms of tenant control.
So if I could follow up. So absent a unanimous decision by the homeowners.
Majority. Yes.
Okay, but a majority decision by the homeowners, things are left in the hands of the landlord? Is that how it works?
Madam Chair, Senator Denborough, if the rules provide that certain decisions, as most of these rules do, are left in the decision of the landlord, then that is left there until and unless the rules change. There are some things in the rules that are much more specific, saying if you must have a shed, it must be no bigger than this, it must be located there. That's all very specific. That there's no discretion there one way or the other. But there are certain decisions that are left in the discretion of the landlord, and that's if that's what's in the rules, then that stays there until the rules get changed.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, right. Maybe we'll hear more from the people.
Thank you very much. Last question?
Yeah, last question, if you don't mind. Mr. Cosgrove, in looking at 277, when they discuss disrepair, they say that it is if there's a component that's broken, collapsing, creating a safety hazard, and this is where I have real concern, or generally in need of maintenance. To me, that seems to be very broad. If you have an air conditioner on the outside that's got a squeaky wheel and that would need require maintenance, it seems to me that that would fall under the category of I can evict you. So my comment to that is I think that you need to look at some amendments to this and tighten up the determination of disrepair, because if it's left to the landlord, it's his discretion what generally in need of maintenance is.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, when I first brought Senate Bill 880 to Legislative Council, who there's a drafter back there, a very smart drafter who's been dealing with these statutes for some time, she asked me, can I use your bill as a way to clean up all these statutes? And I said, please don't, partly because it'd be a huge bill and it would cause it difficulty in passage given the number of issues. These statutes are in desperate need of significant fixes. What we're trying to do in 880 is address only one problem. There are others, and I would agree that those need addressing as well. And you just pointed out one.
Just to clarify this, so now I'm a little confused. So you have a disrepair mm-hmm. that the landlord feels needs to be taken care of. He notifies the tenant. The tenant, so he notifies the tenant. Then if the tenant refuses or can't do it, then a second notice is sent. And then a 30-day eviction.
Madam Chair, Senator Mona Sanderson, I think you're putting the two bills together. In Senate Bill 880, regardless of what the issue is, whether it's disrepair or aesthetics or some other rule violation, you've got too many people living there, you're parking too many cars there, whatever the rule is, there's this courtesy notice of 30 days, please fix it. If that doesn't happen, there's another 60-day notice, you didn't fix it, we need you to fix it. And only then at the end of that is there an eviction notice. Under Senate Bill 277, there are two kinds of issues, disrepair. The proposal is to make it 60 days and you're evicted. Everything else, 30 days. It stays 30 days and you're evicted with no alternative process for negotiation. Now, can parties always sit down and negotiate? You bet. We're trying to put in 880 a process that sort of forces more people into a negotiation rather than the 30-day you're evicted. But that's why I think 277 actually goes in the wrong direction. It means that fewer things are in the disrepair deterioration category, which are never waived, which means you can let them slide without losing your right to enforce them later. And more things are in the 30-day, you better raise it right now before you accept 3 months of rent or you've waived it forever. So that's why we think 277 actually goes in the wrong direction. Does that answer your question?
It helps.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. All right, today is an exercise in flexibility. We're changing our plan. It does not make sense to leave Senate Bill 277 and Senate Bill 880 at this point. So we're going to come back to our introductory panel on Senate Bill 277, which is John Van Landingham, Ann Johnson, and Rita Loberger. And I'm going to ask that people be fairly mindful of time. We've got a number of people who've traveled a very long way, and we want to make sure we get everyone up.
Senator Gelso, could I ask that Rita Loberger go first because her parking meter is about to expire?
Oh, my
God. Yes, please.
Thank you so much, Senator. My name is Rita Loberger. I'm the OSTA president, so I speak for the homeowners. And I'm getting laryngitis because of all you people up here. I did this in my junior year at high school.
I'm going to bring you some water then so that you don't.
I don't think that's going to help. It just croaks out on me.
Okay.
Thank you. So being president of the OSTA organization, I do speak for the homeowners. I have taken this position over from Gary Walters, who has health type issues. So this is my big hat type here, I guess. OSTA also has an 800 line, an 800 phone line, where people such as the homeowners in the various parks throughout the state of Oregon are able to call for questions and concerns when they own their homes. I take these calls. I hear multiple calls every week, and they are sent on to the different volunteer directors in our organization. We have 9 directors on our board. I have rented from Cal-Am. I own my home. and I live in El Dorado. This is the Cal-Am Park. This year, we did not have a complete four-sided inspection because they stopped. We were in between managers. We are without a manager at the present time. I find that the Cal-Am does a, excuse me, Mr. Cosgrove, but there's a very poor documentation with Cal-Am. They do not document your lot lines. They do not document change in rules and regulations according to state law. If they want to propose a change to our leases or our rules and regulations, there is a statute that will accommodate that. I have sat on this coalition board that you guys have heard about for quite some time. And so I know over the last 10 years, we have proposed a number of bills that come to the legislature to be voted on. This is what we are working on right now on Senate Bill 277, and there are additional type changes that we will be making to this bill before it is properly presented. Senate Bill 880, I don't believe we'll be able to touch this year yet. So is there any questions?
No, I think we're good. I think if it's okay to hold questions, we've got so many people to move through. If you've got a burning question, let me know, but let's try to get everybody up, and I'm sure that we will be hearing these bills again. This is definitely not a one day.
But you may have to release her.
Yes, and you can go feed your meter or drive home and take care of that laryngitis. Thank you so much for coming, and thanks for, I know it's a lot of time and effort and coordination all across the state to serve in that role in AUSTA. So thank you very much for
Thank you, Senator, for
your work. All right. Hi. Ms. Johnson.
Hi, Chair Gelsler, members of the committee. My name is Ann Johnson, and I am the co-owner of a manufactured home at Lakeside Village here in Salem. And I'll try to go quickly here. I just want to give you a timeline kind of what happened. In July of last summer, we received a notice that they wanted to do a four-sided inspection, and they did so. On the 8th, we received a notice that there were things we needed to do to comply to our rules and regulations that are, those were written in 2007. They have not changed in over a decade. The things that they asked me to do were pressure wash my home, trim a tree, pull weeds from my garden. So they needed to be done by August the 8th. We did those, and we even went further, and I put down carpet across, new carpet, indoor-outdoor carpet across my deck, and put on a new roof. They threw a party, actually, after all of this, and thanked everyone for the beautification that we had all done of the park. And then they said that they would come around with another inspection to make sure that those tasks that from the rules and regulation compliance had been met. So they came and did those, and on August the 19th, I received a letter of eviction. It cited the Oregon revised statutes, 90630 and 90632. They said that I was out of compliance with the statutes because I needed to replace my wood railing that had lattice on it because lattice isn't allowed in the park, that I needed to remove the shed from my driveway, and I needed to change the color of the trim on my home. So I have been at the legislature for about 14 years, and I did not think that this was the true spirit of our statutes. So I contacted John Van Lanningham, who I had worked with on abandonment laws in 2009 on a work group, and I filed a complaint with the Department of Justice. And I told the Department of Justice that I thought that Cal-Am Properties was misusing the Oregon statutes to send out eviction notices. And in late August, I received a letter from Cal-Am's attorney at the time, basically apologizing for kind of the way things had unfolded, and that they, on second inspection, I was in compliance, and that they were withdrawing the eviction notices at Lakeside Village and giving people more time to take care of the issues, the task at hand, so to speak. So after that, I thought about it, and I had talked to John, and we decided to move forward and contacted Senator Roblin, and that's kind of how we came here to this bill. I don't believe that there's any way to fix this without defining disrepair and deterioration, because it has left it so wide open that they can say the color of your trim, which they just decided should be one of 50 shades of green, and they can decide, oh, now we want 50 shades of green as your trim, and somehow that is an eviction for, you know, disrepair under the statutes. I don't think the color of your paint trim is common sense knowledge of disrepair. And so I don't think without defining it, I don't know that there's any way that we can correct the problem. I think, you know, when John and I were talking, he said, you know, when we crafted these statutes, we meant the paint was falling off your house. That meant disrepair, not the color of it. Mr. Cosgrove suggested that they don't want to define disrepair and deterioration because that leaves them wavering and there's no way to evict people at that point. That's really not true. They have rules and regulations, and within the rules and regulations, if they take our rent for 90 days and there's an old refrigerator sitting in my driveway, then after 90 days, they basically waive the right that my refrigerator in my driveway is okay. But it's not up to the tenants to police the park, and I don't know how they could go 90 days without seeing the old refrigerator in my driveway. There's a lot of people that work within our parks. I also know that in our rules and regulations, if you need things like your trees trimmed or weeds pulled and you don't comply, they can send in their maintenance crews. They will do the work and charge you $20 an hour. So there are a lot of recourses that they can do to fix things if it's aesthetic concerns. But I think to take those in, and also there isn't 30 days before the eviction notice. It was basically the first thing we got that kept adding on to the list. You know, it was trim the tree, and then it was, oh, remove the railing. And so they kept adding on with each notice, and then on the second notice, we got a 30-day eviction notice. So that's all I have to say, and I really hope that the committee will support some kind of legislation that does some kind of definition. I think it's the only way to protect tenants. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Van Lanningham, since we get to have you often, I'm going to ask you to be ever so very, very brief so we can get to all of these tenants that are here, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Van Lanningham. I work as a lawyer for Lane County Legal Aid, now a part of the Oregon Law Center. I can't remember the new name. I have done this work for almost 40 years. I represent tenants. I am a member of the OSTA board and have been for about 10 years. I've been involved with the Manufactured Housing Landlord Tenant Coalition since its inception in 1997. I've been the facilitator for most of the last 15 years. I'm now the co-chair in a new arrangement that we have. The coalition will work on both of these bills tomorrow. I strongly support 277. I could not disagree with Mr. Cosgrove more on almost everything he said. I oppose 880. That's the short version. I've given you a written handout. I hope you'll have a chance to look at it. I've given you some examples there of aesthetics that Cal-Am gave notices to tenants and said were disrepair. I met with the residents of all three parks that you've heard from today in long meetings with lots of very unhappy and scared people. Heritage Village, that you heard testimony earlier, Ann's Park Lakeside here in Salem, and Rita's Park, El Dorado in Clackamas County. I've got examples that I've given you. Let me just mention a couple of them quickly.
Briefly, super briefly.
I'll skip everything. So I hope I'll have a chance to come back and respond to Mr. Cosgrove later. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And we love to hear from you. It's just
I understand.
It's harder for some of these other folks to get here. All right. Thank you very much. Next we have, and we're on 277 list, Donna Evans, Rebecca Ashdown, and Martha Hyatt, please. Welcome.
Hi.
And please go ahead.
Yeah, Madam Chair, my name is Rebecca Ashdown, and this is the first time I've participated in democracy, so I'm a little nervous and kind of excited. I guess what you'll hear, I live in Heritage Village, you'll hear a lot about that. But what I want to focus on is that I moved there in 2013. My husband and I relocated here to the area from out of state. I know you're not supposed to tell people that, but, you know.
That's okay.
Yeah. So we were looking, the rental market is insane, and we were looking for a way to find an affordable place. And so we selected this place because it allowed us to recycle something and have a version of tiny home living. I read through the rules and regs. I spoke to the management because I had concerns that the previous owners hadn't kept things up to par. I was told everything was fine except for trash. I put a clause in my sales contract to have this the trash addressed. 2015, and I do have a picture of, this is what it looked like on the Google map when I looked at the place I purchased. This is the place I purchased. I liked the yard, the greenery. It was great. Nice and cheap. In 2015, Heritage Village started moving in bigger, newer mobile homes on my street, and they were so big, they overfilled the lots. And this was around the time my husband and I were starting to focus on the exterior, and we decided, hold on, let's wait. Who knows what's going to happen with this change? So we kind of held off, and then last summer all of that happened with all the letters. And I want to tell you the things that I was received a notice for trees, shrubs, and weeds, to remove an unauthorized carport enclosure, remove non-compliant fencing, and a shed or home door structure needed repair. I felt like this list was vague. I'm a busy professional. I'm also a graduate student. I had no idea what I was supposed to do with this in 30 days. I made several attempts to contact their management. Went into the office. No one could give me clarification, but they made me sign something, stated they spoke to me. I set up a meeting with the manager, took time off of work. That manager not only did not show up to meet with me, but sent a manager from Washington who could not clarify anything in the letter for me. At almost 2 weeks from receiving the letter, that manager finally met with me via phone and started adding things to the list. And what she told me was that there was a gazebo on the lot that I had to remove, a gazebo that was there when I purchased it, and it was there for a long time. I asked her how I was supposed to accomplish this in less than 3 weeks, and she said, hire a contractor or make your husband do it. Like, you got to be kidding me. Why did no one tell me about this? So, that was kind of what happened last summer. I was smart, and I wrote a very detailed letter to them, and I sought legal counsel. And unlike others in my community, I did not receive the final eviction notice from an attorney. But I know that we'll probably see something this year. Senate Bill 277, I feel, is not, it's a good small solution. I don't feel like it's a huge solution. I think for some of us, like, I would be happy to leave the park, but I feel trapped and like I can't because they won't allow people to sell without making a ton of repairs that people didn't know about. So I think the bill should go one step further and also require, you know, a lot of these manufactured homes cannot move, so we're stuck with it. If they evict us, as the law sits now and as I've read it, we're not only responsible for continuing to pay the lot fee, but to pay for demolition, and that is a huge financial burden to people who are very vulnerable. That is, I know you're short on time. That's about all I'll say. I'll submit this online, but you know, I just want you to know that I'm very busy. I juggle a career, graduate school, and a husband with cancer. I don't have time for vagaries in my life. I feel like Senate Bill 277 would at least allow for some specifics to come to me so that I could address them as an owner.
Thank you very
Thanks.
Much.
Okay, I'm Martha Hyatt. Nice to see you guys here. Well, I'll try to be very brief. I was renting. I was renting for about 13 and a half years. I had, you know, lived with my mom until she passed, and then, you know, I had other personal tragedies happen. So I was happy to live in an apartment community at the time. In the meantime, I was saving money, and I was watching the news, and I was watching homelessness become rampant, and I felt really bad for them, but, you know, I was busy with my life, and I really was saving money for a house. I had all this money for a down payment, and all the house prices went up, and I couldn't buy anything, and then my rent went up, and then it went up again. Within 3 years, it went up $500. It was just bad enough to break me.
$500 a month or $500 in a year?
$500 a month.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I had a nice apartment. It was in West Slope. It was, you know, it had its issues. You know, we had, you know, since I was on a basement apartment, every once in a while the sewer would overflow into it. So, but I was there and, you know, I was running my business and taking care of my life and my family. And finally, everything got settled down. I was ready to buy a house. I watched in 1 month all the house prices increase $100,000. And so the mortgage that I had gotten pre-approved for was no longer, you know, adequate for a home that I could actually live in. So I looked at manufactured homes. It was never my intention to purchase a manufactured home. You know, I wanted land. I want a vegetable garden. I want a yard for my dogs. So I bought this house, and I, with my down payment that I had saved all these years, I paid cash for the house. It was wonderful. But then I had to gut it, and in 1 month I gutted it, ripped out all the walls, all the floors, plumbing, everything, and rebuilt it and moved in. And I didn't realize it was right when they were planning to have all of these mass evictions. And so I take my $50,000 that I invested in this house with my new heat pump, my new windows, my new roof, everything, and receive an eviction notice because I'm not taking care of my house. It took me 5 months to remove the blackberries and the stumps from the backyard, which was their responsibility according to the law, as I have seen. So when I get a little hot when I'm thinking about CalAm and their inability to see that these people that are paying their wages are actually working extremely hard to make a good life for themselves, you know. This is not a condo where we have, you know, everybody is painted the same. This is a mixed community with all strata of individuals, from beautiful children like the Playhouse girl to older people that can't walk, you know, that are practically on hospice, that just want a safe place to live. They don't want to be homeless. And if you want to know what homelessness is, have your property taxes go up 200% in 1 year. You know, this is not a joke. It scared people to death. As far as I know, and I was talking to Eva, three people died from the stress of having this. And it was because of the paint color. You know, they're threatening eviction for paint color. They're threatening eviction for birdhouses. They're threatening eviction for play toys, you know, bikes in their backyard, after they told them to take down their fences so they no longer have any privacy in a backyard to store their bikes. This is not, you know, the disrepair is not you have a fenced backyard. It's that we want you to do what we want you to do. And guess what? Right now we're going to evict you because you did not paint your house sand color, even though we never even suggested that you paint the house sand color. We never said that this is what we are going to do to you, that you're going to have to take down all your fences or we're going to evict you, that you're going to have to do X, Y, Z. It's not, it is a very big deal, and I'm shocked at, you know, it's a surreal situation, and I feel as though I've been ambushed. You know, I owned my house 10 months, put $50,000 into it, to have them say I haven't done enough.
And I don't want to ambush you, but I also want to make sure we get to the other folks.
I know. I know. I'm sorry. I'm passionate.
Oh, don't apologize. You're very passionate. And you're very compelling.
But I did write them a letter. I just, you know, I wrote them a letter stating what I had done, and I still received the termination eviction. And I had to get a lawyer, spend another $300 to have another lawyer write their lawyer. And it was a waste of my time. I was so exhausted by the time they sent this, after working on this place nonstop by myself for 6 months, 10 months, for them to do this, it was unconscionable, you know. And it's only because house prices went up $100,000 in 1 month, you know. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not. Never apologize for being passionate. Thank you for coming and sharing your story.
To me. Thank you.
Well, my name is Donna Evans, and I've lived in Heritage Village for 30 years. And believe me, I have seen changes in that place that you would not believe. But 10 years ago when they changed all our rules on in the park, they threatened us with a $100 a month rent increase if we did not sign that contract. And they gave us a very short time to read it or to even understand it, what we were signing. We were signing away every bit of individuality that you can have. Now, they come in, like last year, my husband had passed away in September, and they came in the spring, and they hit us with all this stuff, and I was just so bad at that time. And now I've lost my husband, I've lost half of my income or more, and they're going to evict me because I have a few weeds in my yard? Well, I got everything under compliance, like they said. I have two sheds in the back, both of which I had in writing that I could put there, my husband and I could put there. And you know, that's not in my file. I'm not saying that maybe they destroyed the paperwork, but I'd like to know what happened to it. Because now, under the new rules, they can come back this spring, and they most probably will, and say, you need to get rid of those two sheds in the back, which are full of my husband's belongings. And I'm really not ready to do that yet. But, so, when they say, well, you have to have all the rules signed off by at least 51% or whatever, that is not true when they come and threaten you with a rent increase of $100 a month when you're living on next to nothing to start with. We have people in that park, such as I now, that live on $13,000 to $15,000 a month. And it is just heartbreaking when you see these older people. I'm one of them. But I can handle it so far. But a couple more rent increases, a couple more things. And I had to go to the expense of painting my back sheds. I took one of them down. I had three. He had three. Anyway, I went to that expense to paint the sheds to match the house. Then the next route, they come along and say, hey, you have to paint the house. So I painted the house. And thank God I have a lot of friends that help me, and I, you know, but now my sheds don't match my house. So I have to, you know, I mean, it's things like this that are just, and there's so many people in there that are just, could tell you heartbreaking stories that it's just unbelievable. And yet we're fortunate that we have a house to live in. And I love that park. I've been there for so long. So many memories, so many people come and go. And I just think it's atrocious what they've done to us. It is awful. And the eviction notice, that did it. That really did it. Because now I've lost my husband. I've lost everything practically, most of my income. And now they're going to evict me. So you buckle down. You have to obey these rules. And that's another thing. Those rules, when you sign it, or this thick, and you don't understand half of them because you don't. Well, I'm not a lawyer. But anyway, that's all I have to say. And thank you for listening.
Well, thank you for coming and sharing your story. And I'm very sorry for the loss of your husband and for what all of you have been. That sounds like a lot of stress and a lot of painting. Oh, it sounds like a lot of paint.
Oh, yeah.
I did want to show you that this is the place that moved in next door to me. And this is what it looked like before.
Wow.
And so you can see why my place is no longer aesthetically pleasing.
I'd like to say one more thing, too,
quickly.
Please. they moved a new house in next door to me. And for months and months and months, they had all this broken concrete up in the front, all the lumber and all that stuff. We now have a new manager. She finally got that all cleaned up for me, and I'm so pleased. But that's what they do. They put in five or six houses all at one time. They're working on them all the time, and they leave all this junk stuff around, you know, that makes my house look even worse than it ever did, you know? But anyway.
Well, thank you all very much. Next up we have, we already had Elva. Yes?
That was helping.
That was helping. So you have one to come up. Okay, come on back. Elva, Paul Brewer, and Joe Tobin.
Oh. Okay, this is the problem with CalAmp being a shitty.
Yeah. Yep, so they may be typical.
I don't think it is.
My name is Elva Galera, and we have moved into Heritage Village in 2011. We moved here from Southern Oregon. We were about to be homeless in our situation. Our sob story isn't quite as compelling, but it is a true life experience. And I have learned that in the village, in Heritage Village, we have had many different experiences since I have moved there. And I didn't realize exactly how much some of the residents at Heritage Village had accomplished in terms of legislation and statutes. But there's great history there. And I think it's going to continue. In regards to just a brief comment, I hadn't ever seen Mr. Cosgrove be involved with Heritage Village issues. This is the first time that I see. Had not seen his signature in any of the documentation that we've received from attorneys.
That would be in terms of the representing. So in the building, kind of people right. that are hired to do the legislative interest wouldn't
so
do that.
It was interesting and to hear some of the things that he had to say. So in regards to this whole issue that is at hand and what is going on, in regards to the inspections as of last summer, we had received notice that an inspection was coming. This was just a few weeks before. Then when inspections came, we got our list of things that needed to be addressed. The second one, we assumed it was going to be, yes, all these items you've addressed, but you still have these to on your first list to continue, and we'll give you another 30 days or another 10 days or something. The second list was completely different. I want to say, mind you, the home that I purchased from them had been vacant and in disrepair, according to the neighbors, 10 years. And it was sold to us at cost. We did buy a box of wood. Because of our situation then, when we purchased it, we had some donations. We had 9 windows donated to us, and we installed them ourselves in 2011. This was the house that had been in disrepair for 10 years. We don't know the situation and why it was there 10 years, why it wasn't demolished. I learned after the fact that I had to read more carefully the lease agreement, the month-to-month agreement, and the rules and regulations in 2012, which was almost a year after I had purchased it, my husband and I. My daughter had agreed to say, Mom, we can use some of our financial aid and some of our student loans to fix it up. Let's do it. We'll move into it. We were told that we could fix anything any way we wanted from the inside, that we had to just make it look nice on the outside. Apparently, that's what we did. We fell onto unemployment for 9 months. 9 months of unemployment can go 4 years of trying to catch up. We finally did. Right when we had purchased paint to finish the outside and install a carport and a porch, we were hit with this inspection. So we set that aside and we addressed the issues in the list. And then we had to address the issues in the second list. And then receive a notice that has the first wording would say, notice of lease termination at such and such address and unit number. Check, due to material noncompliance with tenant obligations or rental agreement or rule pursuant to ORS 90.630. Next check, due to physical condition of manufactured dwelling pursuant to ORS 90.632. And then my husband and all others and myself, and then the office representing the park going on to say and explain, as of September 17 of 2016, we were evicted if we didn't comply with the second list or with anything else. So this is a 1978 built home. This home will not be allowed in any park in the state. I'd have to purchase land to be able to install it somewhere else, or demolish it, or sell it and pass on the problem to someone else. Now, if I didn't comply with the repairs or the disrepair,
I have to ask you to summarize. Sorry.
Then I would have to have the new purchaser agree to remodel it. But then the new purchaser was not going to be allowed to purchase a home in disrepair. So someone was going to have to be responsible for demolishing and continue with that. So 20 homes were demolished in 2016. Some homes have still not been replaced, and these lots are still in disrepair as per the property owners. There is cables coming out of the ground. We don't know if they're live, but they're dangerously there. The playgrounds are in disrepair. The sidewalks are broken, and the rain has caused great disrepair to the sidewalks and walkways, to the roadways that we have at the moment, causing damage to tires, to our vehicles, to our children's bikes, to persons who have tripped just walking their dog. There is no lighting, and we are being evicted for a home that has sat there for 10 years in disrepair.
Thank you. Please go ahead. And I have you signed up for both. One of you I have signed up for both 880 and 277, so I do both at the same time.
Hi, my name is Joe Tobin. I've been in the mobile home park business for 25 years. I operate about 25 parks in the state of Oregon. I understand the concern that when we want to enforce one of the rules, we have to, quote, threaten to evict the tenant. We don't want to evict anyone in this state. There hasn't been any financing for mobile homes. Whenever somebody buys a home for, quote, $25,000, we're lucky if we get $2,500 down. I haven't seen a home sell for $90,000 in 20 years. Vacancies are very, very expensive. It costs us $8,000 to $10,000 minimum if there's ever a vacancy. So we have no interest in vacancies. What we want to do is try to make the parks look nice. Everyone signed the rules. There's a lot of different rules in a mobile home park. I've never actually made rules in a park. We inherit them. They come with the rental agreement. The people that moved in 72 have the 72 rules. Maybe they were changed in 84. So then the people that moved in later have the new rules. But there can be 10 different sets of rules in a park. It all depends what the rules are the day you moved in. We don't ever bother to change the rules because it takes a lot of time and it's not worth it. And you have to get everyone to vote on it. And it's never going, you know, they're never going to agree on anything, so it's a waste of time. The rules on your rental agreement are the rules that you read on your way in and you agreed to on your way in, and nobody put a gun to your head. That's just the way, you know, those were the rules in effect. And those rules were written to try to maintain the park. So what we like about...
You have to be quite that close to the microphone. It's very powerful, and it distorts your voice.
Oh, excuse me.
Okay. No, it's okay.
What we like about 880 is that we don't have to send out eviction notices. We can just ask people, can you make the repairs? It's in your rental agreement. We didn't make these rules up overnight. We don't want to have a waiver where if you leave a refrigerator sitting in your driveway for 90 days and we don't threaten to evict you, that you get to just leave it there. Do you know how bad that looks? I mean, would you like it if your neighbors left refrigerators and freezers in their driveways? We don't want complaints. We just try to maintain the parks and enforce the rules. If the tenants aren't really, we're trying to do it so people maintain their home values. This is not, we don't go around looking for trouble. It's a waste of time. 880 allows us to ask people to fix up their homes, do this, do that, that's in their rental agreement, that's existing, without having to threaten eviction. We don't want to pay lawyers. They just overcharge us. We don't want anyone to leave. We can't afford the evictions. There are no, the dealers, most of the dealers in this state have gone out of business. There's no one lining up to bring new homes in. If I get a vacancy, I have to go out and buy a home for $25,000, and I'll lose about $8,000 or $10,000 in the process of moving it in and selling it. So it'd be better if I just gave you $1,000 to fix up your home. You know, that would be a much better deal if you would actually do it. We give people the paint if they want to paint their home. If they don't want to paint it, we say, here, just if we buy the paint, will you do it? So that's what I have to say about that.
Thank you very much.
277, if I could say there's a problem with it, all it does is it's trying to rewrite what the rental agreement says. The rental agreement already defines the rules. They were there when you moved in. You had a chance to read them. Everybody reads this stuff on the way, and nobody doesn't read it that I've ever met. And so, you know, we don't like what we hear about Cal-Am, but there's generally two sides to every story. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Brewer. My company, Village Northwest, has owned mobile home parks in the state of Oregon since 1987. Just quickly, because I didn't mark for 880, but I'm not certain, according to my attorney, it's really needed, because it's my understanding, unless I'm incorrect as well as my attorney, that in the state of Oregon, you never waive your rights for anything other than conduct, like speeding through your park or whatever. So a refrigerator left on a driveway for 90 days, 2 years later, you could say remove that refrigerator. So that's my understanding on the waiver, which was passed in 1999, which I was part of the coalition at that time. Back to 277. Residents in manufactured home parks have always looked at it as a partnership between landlord and tenant. They want an affordable place to live, but they also want their homes to increase in value. The only way for a home to increase in value in any community is basically for the landlord, as the community, as well as the tenant, to maintain their home, as well as their neighbor's home. A home's value depends not only on the maintenance of their home, but their neighbor's home as well as the community. We all live in a society of rules and laws. I myself live in a subdivision with CC&Rs, who recently sent a letter to all of its 2,500 members, a generic letter that's, and I'd like to quote one sentence of it. We all agree that home values are very important, so we are tasked with enforcing the rules in order to maintain or increase your home values. In fact, I'm recently installing a new patio in my backyard, because it had termites for the third time. And I had to not only get city approval, but I also had to get three neighbors to sign before I could get HOA approval. You know, a community without any curb appeal is no appeal at all. And I believe the problem lies more in communication relationships with the tenants than it does about rule enforcement. And I testified before the October Coalition back in October of last year. And I basically told the tenants, in which the lady here was in that coalition, and we spoke afterwards, that I'm spending millions of dollars improving my parks that I own. And I don't have a problem with it as long as the tenants themselves are improving their homes. I believe that without continuous community and home maintenance and improvements, parks will become like trailer parks of yesterday, and that the result that the home values will decrease dramatically. And yes, I'm frightened of that happening even to my communities, and my residents pointing the finger at me that their homes have decreased in value. In closing, let me say I understand this bill's desire to aid tenants, and I appreciate John Van Landingham's willingness to listen and make changes to the bill. However, I believe this bill needs to be sent back to the coalition for basically further discussion and study. And I've submitted my whole testimony to the committee. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And I understand that both of these bills are going to be discussed tomorrow at the coalition. Chuck, I still have you. I've got someone else on another bill that cannot come back. Can we bring you back? Thank you for being very gracious about that. So we're going to come back to these. This is obviously the start and not the end of this discussion. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 277 and the public hearing on Senate Bill 880. We're going to briefly open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 794 because I understand that Grant Walter cannot come back after today. So is Grant Walter still here? Yes, Grant. And we will reschedule the bill. I would bring up others, but we're technically supposed to leave the room now. So.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate the time. My name is Grant. I'm an organizer with Portland Tenants United. I want to briefly consider how Senate Bill 794 will affect landlords who are lucky enough to have their tenants qualify for the program. Landlords can basically get a check for the rent increase.
And Grant, can you hold on for 1 second? Will you tell us what we're talking about, Matt, so that we can put some context? Sorry about that.
Yeah, I know, sure.
In my rush to get you up, I forgot to follow the process.
No worries.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 794 establishes the Oregon Renter Assistance Program for the purpose of providing temporary rent subsidies to tenants in privately owned rental housing whose rent has increased because of changes in the housing market. It establishes a trust for Oregon Renter Assistance account, and it creates tax credit for qualifying taxpayers who contribute to the trust for the Oregon Renter Assistance account. Applies to tax years after January 1st, 2017. Takes effect 91 days after CITI die.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I just want to briefly go through this. I also have a friend of mine, Maureen, behind me, who's a single mother and cannot come back either.
Fantastic. Although we're going to have you finish in about 4 minutes.
I can do that.
Thanks.
So this program will essentially benefit landlords much more than tenants because they can raise the rent, and that rent increase will be footed by taxpayers through this program. Why would a landlord not raise the rent if they're not paying? If there's nothing that will stop them from doing that, and it's only going to be funded by this program, so they can not only get paid from their rent increase that they levy against their tenants, but also if they purchase a tax credit, then they can reduce their state and federal taxes and then get paid twice. That seems like a landlord subsidy and not a tenant subsidy. Furthermore, this is a program that I think is woefully inadequate, but there's good intentions. A statewide Section 8 program is worthy of consideration, but this is not the correct bill. This is not going to help tenants. This is going to help landlords much more. If we're going to do this, we need to do it right. Our concern and the reason we are testifying here today is that the brains behind this project are projecting a $100 million price tag and will only help 20,000 renters and an assumed $100 per month subsidy. According to census data, Oregon is 40% renters, around 610,000 households. Nearly every data source tells us that more than 50% of these Oregon households are cost burdened, paying over 30% of their rent, paying over 30% of their income towards rent. A $100 increase means $1,200 per year per household. That's just projected by the bill, by the brains. And a bill that would adequately cover the costs of rent increases as we're seeing across the city would be around $700 million. That's far more than what is projected to be covered with this bill. We in PTU routinely hear about $200, $300, $400 a month rent increases year after year. So projecting for a $100 rent increase is just pitiful. So this program is in my mind not anywhere close to being helpful to helping renters, and it's really just a distraction from House Bill 2004, which is going to end no-cause evictions for free and overturn the statewide ban on rent control for free. This is not going to cost taxpayers anything and will help taxpayers far more than this bill before you today. It's, I think, just a disguise to draw attention away from House Bill 2004. It's a waste of taxpayer time and money, your time today, hearing things about this bill, which is not going to help anyone or not going to help nearly as many people as it needs to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And to all of the, there are a lot of people we didn't get to today. Obviously, housing is a,
I thought that he had.
Maureen is a single mother. She just.
Okay, can you do it in 1 minute?
Please? I can say something really fast.
That would
in
be
one
great.
Minute and just that. My name is Maureen Galindo. I am mother of three, Army wife, veteran. While I was just outside with my baby, I overheard the, I guess, most aggressive or largest paid landlord lobbyist and another fellow planning some lies and smear campaign against Portland Tenants United. So I would just like to ask the senators to please be conscious and aware of what you hear about Portland Tenants United. They have helped tremendously Portland. I myself just received a $200 rent increase a few months ago. In fact, the week before the city ordinance for relocation fees, unprovoked, the landlords just gave me a new lease option for all $0 all across. That's how significant this has of an impact. And now instead of taxpayers having to bail us out because I am a student, this 2004 is so much of a better option to help people like me, people in the lower class, people in poverty, people in middle class, the working class. Otherwise, we're just funneling more money up to the landlords, more money up to the 1%, and that's not doing anything for Oregon's economy. It's absolutely messing up Portland's economy. We are in a housing crisis, and this bill isn't going to help it.
All right. Thank you very, very much. And again, I apologize to everyone for whom we ran out of time. These bills will be back so we can have further hearings. We'll have House Bill 2004 on this side of the building in a few weeks that will be coming to this committee, so we'll have a chance to talk more. And what I've learned from today is a lot of people will come, and I will plan the agendas accordingly so that we can get through everything. Thank you, Chuck, for being very patient, and thank you all very much. I'd like to keep the record open on 794, 880, and 277 so people can continue submitting written testimony if they haven't done so because they didn't get a chance to speak today.
For how long, Madam Chair?
Until we hear them again.
Okay.
Okay. Great. And with that, I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 794, and we're adjourned.